10% of WYXR's annual funding, $85,000, used to come from federal support. That funding is now gone. If you enjoy this archive, please make a donation, start a monthly gift, or add a few dollars to your current one. As public media faces an uncertain future, support from our Memphis community matters more than ever. Give now at WYXR.org.
This is Marcella Simeon, and you're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, Memphis.
Thank you. All right. How about that? Manteca, we are, if you're just joining us, we are Let's Get Lost. We come to you every single Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. here at WYXR 91.7 FM. And we bring you the best in jazz, best we have to offer this week. Whatever we come up with, whatever we put together, me and John, whatever we've been thinking about. This week, though, we got a special, special episode because we have a guest. We don't have guests often, but I like having guests. Mark Franklin, can you hear us? Mark, are you there?
I'm here.
He's actually in studio, so I don't want to act like we're on remote. He is with us in studio. Mark Franklin is a great trumpet man, longtime trumpet instrumentalist in town, played with many, many people, also an arranger. We'll talk about that later. Just really quick bio, Mark. Tell us about your life. No, I've known Mark for, we were just talking to Angie about, I've known Mark since, what, 94, I would say?
Yeah, something like that.
So Mark Franklin, there. Originally from Little Rock, came here and for school and has worked with, I won't list all your credits because that'll be embarrassing, but I'll list a couple. Greg Allman. You were in the Greg Allman Band for many years. Did you know that, Mark?
I did. I just now learned that.
You were also in Bobby Blueblatt's band.
Correct.
And is there Bobby Blueblatt on our horizon, I think, in this show? Is there?
Of course there is.
Oh, there is. Of course there is. Who's that awesome bluegrass guy you worked with?
Oh, Jerry Douglas.
Jerry Douglas. He's in Jerry Douglas's band. He's worked with all kinds of people, but as a trumpeter, and but also Mark is a great arranger. That's what we're talking about today, folks. We're talking about arrangers. And if you're not familiar or have no idea what I'm talking about, well, let's let Mark explain. If you were a person listening to this radio station today and you were like, what is an arranger? What was an arranger? What is an arranger on a record date? Let's just put it in that because we're going to be listening. We're going to be in the show features. We listen to records. We love listening to these recordings from a very specific time. And, you know, you need a team of people to produce these albums. And they were all albums, by the way. And you would have, of course, the musicians. You would probably have some sort of supervisor, producer figure. You would obviously have sound engineers. And then you would have an arranger. What does the arranger do?
So the arranger takes the song, and he or she or they write the parts for every instrument. And they come up with interesting rhythms and harmonies and melodies for the song that aren't just the like words and the lyrics.
That's a great way to describe it, Mark. Excellent. So what we're going to do is we're going to sort of talk about and feature some of these. And these were individuals that were, some of them were probably instrumentalists too, I would guess. But this was their job. They were like, maybe could they have been connected to a label? Were they staff? Were they like, or I would assume typically more or less work for hire. You know, they would contract their work all over LA or New York or wherever they were living. Is that probably mostly?
Yeah, all of those things. Yeah. So on this today's show, like this first thing we listened to from Gil Evans, he was his own.
Let's get into the first track.
So he was his own. This is Gil Evans Orchestra. It's Gil Evans' record.
And that was a Dizzy Gillespie composition, Manteca, very famous.
Yep, and Gil arranged that, and it was his band. He got his start with Claude Thornhill, so he was a staff arranger for a big band, like, you know, from the classic big band era. He played piano. He was an arranger. He's most famous for working with Miles Davis on Miles Ahead, Sketches of Spain, Porgy and Bess, Quiet Nights. Post that, like in Miles's fusion era, he would do all the razor blade tape edits for Miles's records.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that when he was doing his funk stuff. He was cutting all the stuff up, right? Yeah. So his most famous connection is with Miles, but
correct.
And I think we were saying before the show that this is around that time of that, and you might have already said that.
No,
this is around the time of the, what, like...
This is recorded around the same time as those classic Miles Davis, Gil Evans records. This one features Cannonball Adderley, and...
He, all over the record.
All over it.
I mean, amazing solos. And then who else? You said Art Blakey's on
drums? Art Blakey's playing drums. Paul Chambers is on bass.
We've played this record on the show, I know.
It's a it's a must listen record if you're an arranger.
And this would have been cut in the same studios as those Miles records.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to say about this particular or Gil? Could we talk about, is there, from what I understand, Gil Evans is, as far as arranging, because we're going to be listening to quite a number of arrangers, and there's a sort of, like, in any art form, there's a developmental thing. There's like, this is the kind of way we're doing it, and then, okay, someone comes along, and then, like, in any, you know, like in all music, like, okay, now we're going to do it a little different, and, like, didn't Gil kind of change a little bit some of the direction things
were
going?
He did. Usually a record like this would be a standard traditional big band with, like, five saxophones, four trumpets, four trombones, and a rhythm section. He would maybe not have as many woodwinds, and maybe the woodwinds weren't playing saxophone all the time, and you'd have French horn and tuba, which wasn't the first time those things happened, but he kind of used them in a way that was outside of what you heard usually.
Right.
And he would use them like a little more, there's a lot more moving parts, let's put it that way. I don't know if you could tell on that record, but like normally that record, the main shout of the song is a very static
harmony.
And he kind of weaves lines in and out, you know, to make all these weird, crazy harmonies.
What, so because was he associated with the Third Stream movement?
Not really, but I'm sure
he was around it. He was aware of it. And he studied with like legit classical guys, right? Or did he?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we could spend all day talking about Gil Evans himself. We could do a whole show on Gil Evans, really. But
five shows on Gil Evans.
You could do five shows on Gil Evans. All right, let's move on because we got a lot of music we want to play. And we next, what do we got next?
It's a Sophisticated Lady, Duke Ellington Orchestra featuring Rosemary Clooney.
Okay, Rosemary Clooney. We know her because even if you don't know who Rosemary Clooney is, you know her nephew.
Yeah, George Clooney.
And
also famously from White Christmas.
Yes, 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 yes. And so this she's working with the master, Duke Ellington.
Duke Ellington.
And what year are we kind of around?
This is 50s.
50s, late 50s maybe. So this is Billy Strayhorn.
This is Duke's tune, Sophisticated Lady, but it's a Billy Strayhorn arrangement. And it's a little, to me, it's a little weird for the time. I guess they were just trying to do something different with the song, I think.
All right, we'll talk about it. Let's listen to it, and then we'll talk about why it's different. Okay, Billy Strayhorn's arrangement, A Sophisticated Lady, featuring Rosemary Clooney.
They say into your early life romance came, and in this heart of yours burned a flame that flickered one day and died away. Then with disillusion deep in your eyes, you learned that fools in love soon grow wise. The years have changed you somehow. I see you now. Smoking, drinking, never thinking of tomorrow, nonchalant, diamond shining, dancing, dining with some man in a restaurant. Is that all you really want? No. Sophisticated lady, I know you miss the love you lost long ago, and when nobody is nigh, you cry.
All right. The great Rosemary Clooney was Sophisticated Lady. And that's from, what album is that from?
It's called Blue Rose.
Blue Rose. And she was a, at this point in her career, she's a pretty big star at this point. I mean, she's, or is it later? Or is she getting up there? Or,
yeah.
I'm not.
I think after White Christmas, I think she kind of peaked a little bit career-wise and kind of for the rest of her career was kind of like, never kind of reached that same pop success. But I know we talked about this before the show, Joe, is that a lot of these pop singers really were interested in becoming more than just a pop singer.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what she did. And I feel like she was probably pretty happy with the way her artistic career happened.
She was a jazz head. She was always like she probably was like freaking out working on this record with Duke Ellington. I mean, like, that's the top. You can't, yeah. It doesn't get any better.
Yeah. Well, he's the seed.
Yeah. But like Strayhorn, let's just kind of like talk about the arrangement a little bit. I mean, without getting too like in the weeds technically, but like Strayhorn, for people who don't know, like Strayhorn was Duke's like, right. I read that Lush Life book when I was in high school. It's an amazing book. If you're interested in this stuff, there's a book on Billy Strayhorn. He was a fascinating man. He was a genius, and he was Duke's right-hand man, confidant, and arranger for a very long time, and started out, like, he was like a child prodigy kind of deal, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, Pittsburgh, I believe?
I can't remember.
If I remember correctly, but wrote that song Lush Life when he was a teenager, which is crazy. But is there anything about him that you could sort of articulate, like simply like what his style was or how not his process, but like something about him from an arranger standpoint, you know, like what sticks out about him?
Well, really, you can't really talk about him without talking about Duke at the same, I mean, they're,
cause he was like,
they were like one person almost.
And Duke was already, before he started working with him, Duke Ellington was already like Duke Ellington.
Yes.
But then he comes in and he could do Duke Ellington's thing, but then he's like, the way I remember it, like he could like arrange just like the old stuff and his sound. He could even play piano just like him, but he also brought his own vibe, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Because I always think of those like pretty major seven chords.
Right.
Some of his harmonies a little more sophisticated.
Exactly.
What about this arrangement? Is there any, this sort of like a typical Strayhorn thing? You were saying something that almost,
yeah, like, I don't know if you noticed at the end, after, you know, there's the little saxophone soli, and it's just a little disjointed. It's not like the lines don't move smoothly. It's purposefully like a little disjointed to maybe accentuate the dissonance in the chords.
Right.
I don't want to get too hairy, but
no, that's good.
But here's some Strayhorn legend for you.
Let's go.
When Duke Ellington was looking for an arranger writer to work with, I heard, legend has it, that he initially contacted Onzie Horn from right here in Memphis.
What?
And that Onzie Horn turned him down and recommended Billy Strayhorn.
That is crazy. I did not know that.
I don't know if it's just a, you know, it's a legend. It's not a...
And there's a lot of folks probably, you know, out there that... Well, I say a lot, but there might be some folks out there who've heard of Onzie Horn because he was such a pillar in the community. He was a teacher,
businessman,
yep,
vibraphonist, pianist. I think he's playing piano and vibes on like a lot of early Bobby Bland, those early Bobby Bland records. arranger, composer, orchestrator. He was the orchestrator for the Shaft record, Isaac Hayes Shaft.
So you ended up working with Isaac. Was he the guy that told Isaac he would never something? Who was the guy that was like, you don't remember?
I don't remember.
There was some story and when Isaac was in school, he's like, you'll never amount to anything. And then he like, yeah, you're going to end up working for me. And he did or something. The teacher, I don't know if that's Mr. Horn or not. What about, speaking of the alto saxophone, that's
Johnny Hodges,
the great Johnny Hodges.
Yeah.
Who was like such a voice for
oh, yeah.
that band. He's well, like the singer in the band. In
right. Well, so many people in that band were,
right.
you know,
because the band stayed.
Yeah, Paul Gonzalez, Harry Carney.
You didn't have guys running in and out like a lot of these bands.
Yeah, they would write, instead of writing on the... Normally when you get a piece of music when you're performing as an instrumentalist, it has the name of your instrument at the top. So I play trumpet, it would say trumpet.
Yeah.
Well, if you were in Duke's band, it would say Mark.
It would say the name of the musician.
It would say the name of the musician and not what part they played.
And they would use each... They would specifically... They would... He would... Strayhorn, that is... Or Duke, if but Strayhorn, we're talking about him. He knew these instrumentalists so well, he could probably. I'm assuming the arrangement sort of even tailored the strengths of these individuals.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, when you have somebody like Johnny Hodges, I mean,
Johnny Hodges, who's like the quintessential lead alto, would you say? Like,
oh yeah.
You know. All right. Yeah. We could talk again. We could talk about in all of these people. We could do entire shows. We could do multiple shows. We could do multiple shows on Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn's arranging, and we're going to move on. Next,
Thad Jones.
These are titans of this business.
Yeah.
Right. So Thad, the Detroit brother of Elvin and Hank.
Yep.
And he had a fairly. Did they have? Was it a long? Did were they together long? Because I know they had a falling out at some point. But did Mellows that? How long did
they did it for? For a few years, yeah. A
few years.
Yeah, they had a good little run there.
But this is, to me, like, when I talk to guys like you, like, in, or read about, like, this is another kind of sea change sort of thing. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, now, like, the big band thing is now doing this.
Right. Well, when they were doing this, big bands were done.
Were done. But I'm just talking, like, not in terms of the marketplace or, like, business, but, like, from a pure arranger aesthetic place. This.
Oh, yeah.
Is like, we're now going to go, we're not doing it the way we used to. We got this whole new language maybe. Or
well, the great thing about Thad Jones is like, rhythmically, thematically, it's still everything that you know and love about big band music.
Right.
But there's just something else to it. You know, he uses a few extra notes in his chords. He makes things a little crunchier. He uses a little more counterpoint.
Yeah.
You know, they stretch it, really stretch out the solos on live records and in the studio too, which was rare. But
so we're going to hear Tiptoe. That's like, I think I remember playing like that song in like my high school big band. Is that possible?
It's possible. Yeah. A lot of high schools and colleges, but also most notably, Snooky Young on the trumpet solo on this.
Okay. We'll talk about it. We're going to listen to it and then we'll get back into it. So this is Thad Jones, Mel Lewis, Tiptoe from their Consummation, or is that right? Yeah. Consummation. All right, here we go. We'll be right back.
Support for WYXR comes from House in the Mid-South and the Good Life DJs, presenting their first annual Labor Day picnic at Overton Park on Sunday, August 31st, featuring special guests Larry Mr. Fingers Hurd, Brian Hamilton, Selector Jack, and more. For more information on being a vendor, you can call 901-654-7632.
All right. If you're just joining us, we are celebrating the Arrangers here at WYXR 91.7. Let's Get Lost. We have our friend Mark Franklin to help us, guide us through a journey of the super nerd. Because you got to be a major nerd to be able to do this. This is not an easy skill, folks. I mean, this is, you know, when we're thinking about what we just heard, and obviously from the things that we've already checked out, we're moving forward a little bit. I mean, there's a lot more licks. There's a lot more sophisticated rhythms, like that solely part in the middle was wild with the bass player and the bass and the trombones. Where did Thad Jones, did he study with anyone, or was he kind of learning this stuff on the streets and picking stuff up? And
yeah, probably a little bit of both. I know that, like,
now you have to go to school for this stuff,
right? Well, Thad actually studied.
Where did he go? Do you know?
He actually, when this band broke up, he actually left the country and went to Europe to study composition.
That's crazy.
After he
and he's already done, like, what we're hearing, things like
yes,
that.
Yes, he's already established himself as Thad Jones, the, like, legendary trumpet player, legendary arranger, composer. But let's go study some more.
He's like, yeah, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, but also this band, I know we mentioned earlier, featured, he didn't play solo, but he was playing lead trumpet on this, is Marvin Stamm.
Memphis,
from right here in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, there's a Memphian on this record.
There's always a Memphis connection somewhere.
Always. So Thad Jones is part of this family in Detroit. his brother Hank comes on the scene. I think first he's a pianist. And then, you know, his other brother, Elvin Jones, is very famous drummer who's in the John Coltrane Quartet, very famous group. And then he's like, great trumpet player, but I think of him now, I almost think of him more as an arranger. When did that, is this when that sort of solidified? Was he already doing, I don't know if you know or not, but is he doing stuff like, is he's already arranging big band music?
He was arranging big band music, so he was in the Count Basie Orchestra.
That's right.
So he was writing
charge for them, yeah.
Yeah, he was writing small group stuff.
But he's not writing like, that's like the kind of stuff just heard.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, he had to start his own band to write stuff like that.
Right.
Nobody, I think I'll let you play that in Count Basie.
They're not going to let you do that in Count Basie.
No.
And I was, and like you were saying, because we were talking about some of the, I mean, that sounds like there's some challenging moments in that chart. That's probably something they wrote. I mean, they just read off. I mean, do you think there was a rehearsal, maybe?
I think there was probably some rehearsal.
There probably was.
Well, you know, back in the day, Joe, they used to rehearse for recording sessions.
Really?
You didn't know that. You didn't just show up and do it.
I didn't realize
Sometimes
that.
Sometimes they would rehearse.
How you doing, sir? Here we have people waving at us at the radio station, which is good because we like to connect with the people. So we kind of reached, I think with that piece, it's like, I'm not saying, because it gets crazier as time goes by, but we're now going to move to Blossom Deary, which we're not going to, this is going to kind of be more, I'm assuming, I don't think I know this particular cut, but this is going to be more of a singer-oriented arrangement.
Yeah.
So the point I'm trying to make is like, so we've got, you know, where you have Mel Lewis and Thad Jones, they're like, this is more like for the musicians, you know, we're getting together and this is all the stuff we want to do, but we can't when we're like arranging for like singers, not that there's anything wrong with that, but this is like, we're going to make a record. We can like throw everything in the kitchen sink and do all these crunchy chords and do all these licks and have all this like really cool, nerdy stuff that we like. But then what we're going to, this is like dressing a singer, because there's like, you see where I'm going? It's like two different things. It's like you're like putting a dress around a beautiful voice or a backdrop, and then that's kind of where we're going now with Blossom Deary. Can we talk about Blossom a little bit? Yeah. Because I know you're a huge fan.
Oh, I'm a huge Blossom. Thanks to our good friend Jim Spake. I don't know if any of you know Jim. Or
Cabbages been, and Kings.
If you've ever been lucky enough.
Every Thursday.
In the 90s, he would make me little mixtapes and with all kinds of stuff on them. And he made me a special Blossom Deary tape because he thought I would like it. And he was right. But this record is from her May I Come In record, which is on Capitol, which was her only major label release in like a 50, 60 year career.
Because I remember when I lived in New York, she was like playing, she was a cabaret artist. She would play, you know, clubs and hotel lounges and stuff like that. And with like a piano trio. But this is a big deal. This is a Capitol Records.
Correct.
This is her big album.
Correct.
And who dressed this thing up? Who's arranging?
His name is Jack Marshall.
Okay, tell us about him a little bit.
So he was like a producer, arranger, on staff at Capitol, but also did like incidental music for TV shows like The Munsters.
Did he write the theme?
He did not write the theme, okay. But he did the like score inside the show.
Okay, right.
But also another unconfirmed legend about Jack Marshall is that he came up with the idea for the arrangement for Fever by Peggy Lee, the like super broke down just bass and finger snaps.
Yeah, iconic.
Yeah.
Thing. So that's kind of an interesting point because arranging isn't just like, you know, 20 piece big band lit da da da. Arranging could just be like putting a bass player behind this vocalist. It's any kind of like set dressing, set piece, putting the backdrop around, you know, in this case, a singer or, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just, it can be small, it can be big. All right. We have people waving at us here. They want our attention, but we're on air. So Blossom Deary is she never was a huge star. This was her big record. I think she should have been, but she has this very small voice, very delicate voice.
Yeah.
And this is her big record. And this is Capitol Records. This is as big as it gets at the time.
Right.
When you say like, this is Capitol Studios. These are the best musicians in Los Angeles. They have probably a myriad of staff arrangers. Jack Marshall gets the gig. It could have been probably others. Someone else could have ended up doing it. I'm really curious, like how jobs were delegated out, and I'm sure it was through the union, maybe, or I don't. Who knows?
Who knows? Scheduling.
So he gets this gig, and anyway, let's check it out. We're gonna hear "I'm in Love Again." Do you know the composer? Is this a standard?
It's a standard.
Standard. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about it when we get back. We'll look it up. We'll look it up for you guys. So Blossom Deary, "I'm in Love Again."
I'm in love again, and the feeling's not new. Yes, I know the signs, and I know what to do. It's a highway that I have traveled through before. Enjoy everything.
All right. We just heard Blossom Dearie, I'm in Love Again, and that was a Jack Marshall arrangement. You were saying something about the woodwinds on that.
Oh, yeah. So the credits on this are kind of hard to come by, and none of the woodwinds are credited. It just says the Capitol Woodwinds. So I guess whoever was in the studio that day was the Capitol Woodwinds. But
that's funny.
So on these, especially on the West Coast, you didn't hire separate woodwind players for every instrument. You would have like four guys or girls or whoever that played all the woodwinds. So on this record, on other tracks, these same four fellas might be playing saxophone or clarinet or flute.
Oh, they were
or bass
doubling
parts? Yeah, they were all doubled. They played.
And they're multi-tracking all those that stuff.
No.
I don't understand.
They like throughout the song, they would write for. Any four woodwinds.
I got you.
And they couldn't handle.
And they were all doublers.
Yeah, they were all doublers or triplers or quadruplers or whatever.
So, but they would be probably hired individually, or were they usually like? Yeah, we usually work with the same three or four.
Yeah, they were probably on staff.
Yeah.
There.
So what instruments did we just hear?
There was probably a couple clarinets, a couple flutes, maybe one flute, one alto flute.
So to sort of articulate for our friends at home what a doubler is, because they're like when you're talking like they're saxophone players. Like I'm a tenor saxophone player. But that's not the same thing as an individual who would go, I'm a doubler. I'm a reed doubler.
It's someone that plays more than one instrument.
And usually a doubler is not just two. It's usually like.
Yeah, usually.
Because I have a buddy who like went to school. He's like, he's a guy I worked with on a ship. And then he's like, because he was trying to get into Broadway, which he did. He's trying to get into the Broadway thing. And he was like, he had to go and just, he was like, went to a program just for doublers. And because you got to learn, because like, just because you can play a saxophone, yeah, the fingerings might be similar on a flute, but it's a whole different technique, right?
Correct.
And then clarinet, bass clarinet, you know,
yeah.
It's like you have to be able to do the, like, and then get a sound and reading and the blending. It's like a whole deal.
Yeah.
And
on the,
it's
on
a
the,
skill.
On the like more classic big band records, that were like Ellington and Count Basie. Like there would be a guy that played flute. So he played
like
saxophone and flute. They would do one
guy.
There would be like, and then there would be another guy that like, okay, I play clarinet. Now early on, everybody played clarinet. Like most saxophone players early, you know.
Because clarinet was so popular.
Because clarinet was so popular. Saxophone was seen as a novelty instrument, as not something that was really going to work out.
It's like guitar players played banjo. They all were like banjo players.
Yeah. Do you play banjo?
I don't play banjo.
But anyway, I digress. Also, Jack Marshall is the father of Penny Marshall and Frank Marshall, filmmakers and actors.
Yeah, you said that earlier, or when we were off air. That's crazy. So they came in from the biz. All right. Well, we're running out of time, so we got to keep going. I could talk about each one of these like for an hour. All right. Let's move on. You want to go to Count Basie?
Yeah.
Okay. We're gonna play one of the great big bands of all time, Count Basie. But this is a little bit. This is later. We're not talking about 1930s.
No, this is 40s. This is later.
This is much later, and we're gonna hear Shiny Stockings, and that is the vehicle and the composition by.
Frank Foster.
Composed
and arranged.
Composed and arranged. Frank Foster composed and arranged this piece of music. And didn't he come to Memphis?
He did. When I was at the University of Memphis.
I remember seeing y'all.
He played with the Southern Comfort Jazz Band.
So you got to hang out with this guy.
I did. I was actually in charge of driving him around while he was here.
Let's listen to it and maybe you'll have a Frank Foster story for us. All right. Frank Foster's Shiny Stockings. Thank you. All right, the great Count Basie. Now that's right in there. That's the class. That's a classic sound, right?
Oh yeah,
of course. And that was arranged by Frank Foster, who also composed the tune "Shiny Stockings." That's his famous.
Yeah, that would probably be his most famous.
That's his most famous composition. And this is 50s Count Basie, and you see these Joe Newman, the trumpet section. You see, you know, Ernie Wilkins is an arranger, Sonny Payne on drum. This is Freddie Green. This is a classic band.
Oh, yeah.
You know, April in Paris, and you think of, you know, the band out of the, you know, Blazing Saddles, and I remember seeing that when I was a kid, and, you know, the Count Basie, and it was like, this was this band. And Benny Powell, my old teacher's in the band, and he had tons of stories about this band. You were going to say you got to hang out with Frank Foster in the 90s, was it, when he came here?
Yeah, it was the early to mid 90s. I can't remember what year it was, but I was charged with taking him to the air, picking him up from the airport, taking him to the hotel, bringing him to the university, taking him for breakfast, took him to other lands.
You took him to other lands?
I took him to other lands.
Was he like, what are all these hippies doing here?
Was he cool?
He was cool. He was a lot of fun. He was a super nice guy. I tried to like get some nuggets of wisdom from him about arranging, and
what'd you get?
I got start at the beginning and end at the end.
I love it.
Also, so there was, I can't remember which song it was, maybe Down for the Count, which he also wrote. He played with the big band with us, so I got to, you know, be on stage at the same time as him. I wouldn't dare say I played a gig with him because,
oh, you did,
but,
I'll say it.
But anyway, so it was a blues form, and he's like, before the concert, he's like, hey, y'all need to be ready, because I'm only going to go around two times. It's going to be really quick. The solo's going to be real fast, and then we're going to get out and go home. So we're like all ready to go, and he plays one time. He played two times. We're all getting our horns up ready to play, and then he keeps going. And it's three times, four times. He ended up playing like 30-something choruses.
You think that was just to mess with you, or you think he was just feeling it?
No, I think he was feeling it. It was one of the best saxophone performances I've ever seen in my life.
That's awesome. I was at
that
concert.
Incredible. He was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right, we could talk about him all day. Let's move on real quick because we're running out of time. We got Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, so
we don't play many Marvin Gaye records on Let's Get Lost.
Yeah, so just like we said with the pop singers wanting to be jazz singers. Well,
and a lot of these guys did that. Sam Cooke made big band records or jazz records.
There was a point where everybody pretty much wanted to be Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
And this record is one of those records by Marvin Gaye. One of his, I think it's his second album. But notably, this is arranged by Melba Liston, who was a trombonist, who was in Gerald Wilson's band. She was in Dizzy Gillespie's big band. She was in Quincy Jones's band. And legend, another jazz legend, is that a lot of stuff that you heard from those bands might not have her name on it, but she might have written it anyway.
Yeah, so, we've played quite a bit of Melba up here.
So
this is a Melba arrangement.
This is a Melba arrangement for Marvin Gaye.
Of You Change.
You've Changed.
Standard, classic tune. All right, real quick. We'll do You Change by, arranged by Melba Liston. Featuring some guy named Marvin Gaye.
You change. your kisses now are so blasé. You are bored with me in every way, and I can't understand. Oh, the words I love you. Each memory that we share, oh, you ignore every star above you. I can't realize that you ever knew. No need to tell me that we are through. It's all over now.
All right, the great Marvin Gaye with "You've Changed." Whoa, hold on, we can't give it away the goods yet because we're going to close out on that. The great Marvin Gaye with "You Changed," with Melba Liston and a Melba Liston arrangement. Probably not. I'm assuming there wasn't too many lady arrangers during this period of time. She would probably be fairly unique.
Oh, she was very unique.
Yeah. So she would have done all the string parts too.
Oh, yeah, she did the whole... So back then, you didn't just have like a string arranger. Or
right.
Like, you did everything.
You did the whole thing.
Because everybody showed up at the same time and played on the record.
Yeah, and you were saying those parts were cut in New York, and then Marvin put his vocals on later.
Yes, he was on tour when they made the, like, recorded the band, and then he came in later.
And he was already had done his Motown. He'd already had hits, right?
I don't think he had quite gotten there yet.
So they were like, we're going to make him a...
Nat
torch singer guy?
Yeah, they want him to be Nat King Cole, and he might have wanted to be Nat King Cole as well.
He sounds great doing this stuff. I mean, it sounds like him. It doesn't sound like him. He's trying to do
right,
some kind
exactly.
of like corny, like, hey, look, I'm, yeah, he.